to stay with the fat boys, fat boys. Everyone cleans the plate. Truly inspired, the last of us lingers to sit by the fire and lick up the fingers of the fat boys, fat boys. Skinny boys are losers who seem to try too hard. And every time they talk to me, they won't let down their guard. All that blind devotion, all that foolish pride. Skinny boys are losers with no place left to hide. I don't want no squeaky clean boys, so repressed and so refined. Walking like their feet don't touch the ground. I don't want no mama's best boy, undeveloped, undefined. Waiting for his chance to be profound. I just want an overgrown boy, unconditioned, unrehearsed, fleshy body waiting for the squeeze. Overweight and overblown boys, wet my whistle, quench my thirst. Chubby cheeks just drop me to my knees. All that extra skin, all that extra stuff in dear food gives me another reason to burn for the fat boys, fat boys. Everyone wants to sin, truly discerning the last of us hovers to turn off the music and turn on the collars with the fat boys, fat boys. Through the paces, we're puffing our chests and we're stuffing our faces for the fat boys, fat boys. Everyone takes a peek. Truly determined, we go through the paces, we're puffing our chests and we're stuffing our faces for the fat boys, fat boys.
Transition, you're tuned to Backwoods Pier's Broadsides, Thursday afternoon, July 16th, 1998, on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Stay tuned, and we're going to be giving you lots of interesting stuff, updates on Santa Cruz, particularly the most recent city council meeting, plus plenty of other num-nums, including Berkeley, San Diego, and points around the nation, yes, the nation. Do a particular focus on free radio. We were lucky enough in the last couple of days to get interviews with high-powered attorney Luke Hyken up in San Francisco, who's been covering the situation for Free Radio Berkeley. For those of you who don't know, free radio, what you're listening to right now, is broadcasting to you without a license. We are broadcasting to you essentially out of the initiative of community members who feel that the radio waves should be the property of the public, and we are attempting to reclaim the radio waves for the public, as thousands and thousands of people like us and many unlike us are doing across the country. The FCC, the government arm of the National Association of Broadcasters, large corporate radio, has been trying to shut down free radio stations. They regard us as a threat to their commercial existence, and there's a sort of a kind of a bureaucratic inertia which attempts to maintain their existing approach, regardless of how archaic. Actually, we've got no. I mean, I have a problem with free radio taking up all. I mean, with non-free radio, slave radio, should we call it, commercial radio taking up all the airwaves. But I'm not trying to close them down. I'm simply trying to assert the right of the rest of us to be able to broadcast freely. So let's listen to a little of this debate. Let's get a little of the background of how it came to be that free radio in Berkeley was closed down, and what's up next for Free Radio Berkeley. Before we do, however, let's hear a little from Carol Denny, who sings a great song about free radio, Set Your Radio Free, from her album Failure to Disperse, and I dedicate this song to the long-suffering and hard-working Reckless, whose show follows mine on Sundays when I have an 11 o'clock show in the morning. Set Your Radio Free.
Hyken, attorney at law in San Francisco. Hi, Luke.
Hello.
Luke, you've been, tromping the legal corridors for Free Radio Berkeley for the last 5 years, right?
And indeed.
And what has that gotten you?
Well, you know, when we started, there were very few microstations in the country. The FCC took a position that wouldn't even consider licensing micro radio. They only called it pirate radio. There were no cases pending in court when we started. Right now, there are over 8 cases in federal court around the country, New York, Philadelphia, Kansas, here, Florida, challenging the FCC's allocation of the airwaves to the rich only. There's FCC rulemaking taking place now where the chairman of the FCC has indicated that he wants to see some kind of diversity that does not exist and that they're seeking rulemaking procedures to permit and allow micro radio. And at some point, we think that the FCC is going to have to go into court and answer the substantive attack that's been made on them instead of just responding procedurally to every single one of these attacks.
Which case do you think is the most promising and which is the most interesting?
Well, it's really hard to evaluate. The most interesting will be the one that results in the FCC actually having to bite the bullet and justify allocating the airwaves to the National Association of Broadcasters and its constituents. I mean, the FCC is entrusted with licensing stations in the, quote, public interest. The airwaves belong to the American people. Since 1934, they have interpreted that to mean give all of the licenses to super-rich commercial broadcasters. That's not only a violation of that entrusting obligation, it's an insult to the American people. I mean, the nature of democratic communications, the dialogue that's necessary in a democracy, is a qualitatively different dialogue than that which takes place when you're selling products, when you're a commercial broadcaster. The FCC has totally denied access to the American people to engage in democratic dialogue over the airwaves. So that the process that the FCC has used to do that year after year has been by procedurally preventing anybody from challenging that on the merits. And instead you end up in the kind of procedural obstacle course we've ended up in our case, where the judge is saying, oh no, I'm not going to talk about the substance of your arguments, I'm just going to say you don't have standing because of ABC. Now, of the cases that are pending right now, we believe some of them are going to have a judge who's going to say, this is nonsense. At some point, the FCC, you've got to answer why you're doing what you're doing. That will be the most interesting case.
Well, now, let's go back, and maybe you can give us, first tell us, what kind of obstacles does an individual face who wants to open a radio station currently using present FCC procedures?
Well, if you were to contact the FCC and say, I want to set up a radio station in my own local community, I don't want to broadcast with 100,000 watts and I don't want to sell beer and Dodge caravans, I want to, you know, just talk to people in my community, they would write you back and say, look at the FCC rules and regulations, we don't license any stations of less than 100 watts, and here's the application. The application has filing fees ranging from about $2,000 up to about $3,000. It's an incredibly complex application that requires engineering studies, that requires one procedural prerequisite after another that no typical citizen of this country is going to go through in order to broadcast. So the average engineer would suggest that it takes between $50,000 and $100,000 to go through the application process. Now, that's if you know how to fill out the questions, right? When we point that out to the court, that telling somebody to go through that process in order to just get a micro radio transmitter functioning in the community is like saying to a mother that wants to take a splinter out of her child's finger that they've got to go to medical school and get a degree in heart surgery. I mean, it is not only impractical, it's totally unworkable. And we're pointing out the absurdity of suggesting to local micro-broadcasters that they go through the same licensing process that Westinghouse, General Electric, and Disney go through for their multi-watt stations that, you know, broadcast over entire sections of the country.
Can you give us kind of a chronology of how things have gone with Free Radio Berkeley from the beginning, just sort of how you got involved, and then just what the process has been for Free Radio Berkeley?
Well, a lot of this arose when the National Lawyers Guild Committee on Democratic Communications started evaluating the total silencing of the American public. You know, how did the American people become voiceless? We don't own the radio stations, we don't own the televisions, we don't own the one newspaper in town. And the technology that is available for mass use, the radio, somehow has been stolen from us. I mean, we think the pirates are the NAB and the FCC, not these micro radio stations. Mbana Kantaka was an African-American blind broadcaster in Springfield, Illinois, who with a one-watt transmitter could communicate with 90% of the black community in Springfield because it's so ghettoized, right? The FCC went after him and fined him and said, shut down your transmitter. Who suggests you have a right to talk to your community? He said, basically, fly a kite, or is the equivalent. And the FCC never did anything else. He's been on the air since then. Mbana did not want to attack the FCC on the basis of what they were doing was illegal, because he felt they have no more right to control the airwaves than they have to regulate my breathing. The airwaves belong to the public. No court's going to tell me what rights and wrongs I have to speak over the airwaves. Jennifer in Free Radio Berkeley said, no, I disagree with that. The fact that they're regulating the airwaves doesn't mean that we don't want to challenge them in court. And while I agree with Mbana that the FCC's got no business stopping us from doing what we're doing, we will at least argue with them that they should do it in a constitutional way. They went on the air in Berkeley, and when the FCC came and issued a notice of apparent liability, which is a fine, basically saying, you know, you're talking to your community, that'll be $20,000, please, and don't ever do it again. We wrote back a long response attacking the constitutional allocation of the airwaves by the FCC, what we felt was the unconstitutional allocation of the airwaves.
This was back in 1993?
Yeah, it was 93, I believe. Might have been, by the time the appeals went through, it might have been 94. The FCC then sat on that application for about a year and a half, which is how they usually do it. They just, you know, sit there. They then went into court, the federal court, to enjoin Dunifer from broadcasting because Stephen continued to do it, saying, listen, I want to challenge this. This is nonsense. They went in and sought an injunction from Judge Wilkin. She said, wait a minute. You've had this petition pending before you for a year and a half. You haven't even answered it. What are you doing coming in here? That's number one. Number two, they've been on the air for the last year and a half. There's clearly no immediate irreparable injury from them doing it. You know, airplanes aren't falling out of the sky. There's no harm to anybody. Why are you seeking an injunction? Let's have a trial. They then started their procedural game, saying, no, you don't have jurisdiction to hear this case. And they don't have standing to challenge it.
Wait, let me understand this, Luke. After bringing the case into a court, presumably they thought they had jurisdiction because...
Yes, they argued she had jurisdiction to issue their injunction, but she didn't have jurisdiction to hear the defense.
Okay.
Yep, honest to God. That is ultimately the ruling that she made. She said, yeah, they have a right to come in here and tell you to shut down, but until you go through the process of applying for a license, you don't have a right to raise the fact that their regulations are unconstitutional.
But initially she did not take that position, is that
no.
Correct? Okay. And so you had quite a breathing room for a number of years.
3 years, they were on the air, you know, 24 hours a day. And, you know, there were hundreds of people broadcasting, high school kids, and people from the community, and artists and poets. And I mean, you know, anyone that's heard a micro radio station immediately recognizes the difference between selling products and listening to people share their ideas. They are qualitatively different kinds of broadcasting.
Now, what about those who would say, well, we've had stations like KPFA for years that are non-commercial stations? I mean,
Well, KPFA and the Pacific stations and NPR are a sort of alternative. First of all, they are both multi-million dollar corporations. The difference between underwriting and advertising is a subtle distinction that only people at NPR and Pacifica would understand. To the rest of us, it sounds like commercials. But the reality is that the suggestion underlying the idea that those are alternatives is that there is, quote, an alternative. We're a diverse society. There are not two voices. There are many voices. NPR and Pacifica surely cannot and would not even pretend to representing the multiplicity of voices that have a right to speak over our airways. They're monolingual English, first of all, except for very minor exceptions. They are usually educated, liberal people who broadcast over those stations. And what you don't have is the kind of voices that are totally silenced in this country by the fact that they don't have money, they don't have power, they don't have influence in education. And those voices got as much a right to speak as anybody else. As a matter of fact, during this particular period, it's probably more important to hear from the American people than it is to hear from their owners.
Now, I would think that there'd be not just people, let's say, on the left concerned about this, but also people on the extreme right and people, for example, who are members of unusual language groups or unusual special...
Well, isn't there a thousand? You know, the FCC has acknowledged that last year alone they got 10,000 telephone calls seeking information about micro radio stations.
And the reasons that that is taking place is because there are literally, you know, people in communities all over this country who, when given the opportunity to talk to each other, jump at the chance. I mean, there are stations in which the city council and the police departments and the local high schools and the local church groups all want to have micro radio because they're the only local voice that exists on the airwaves, right? Those people have written the FCC and say, look, this radio program is the only one that will play our city council meetings. We're in between, you know, Dallas and Houston and San Antonio. No one's going to play our stuff. Allow us to have this station. The FCC writes back and says, no, file for an application and we won't give a waiver. And, I mean, you know, it's nonsense.
Is this an issue of political party, or do both Democrats and Republicans sort of unite to support the FCC's repressive efforts?
Well, I tend to think that Gore Vidal's analysis is really correct, that we really have one right-wing party with two heads. You know, I'm not sure there's a real distinction. No politician, Democrat or Republican, is going to challenge the NAB. I mean, the NAB controls the political voice of the country.
That's the National Association of Broadcasters?
Right. You know, its constituent organizations are billionaire. You know, Westinghouse is, what, $18 billion. Disney's $24 billion. When you look at the corporations that control the media, they own the television stations, they own the radios, they own the newspapers. What politician in his right mind is going to challenge the NAB's monopoly over the airwaves? Nobody that doesn't want to commit political suicide is going to do that. So you have the FCC running amok, and you have the NAB being so powerful that last year, or I guess 2 years ago now, when the FCC was considering the Telecommunications Act and suggesting that it was not appropriate to give away all of this new digital space to the very monopolies that already control it, but rather making people bid on it or allocating a certain percent to the people, the NAB threatened to shut down the FCC through lobbying. I mean, what regulatory agency can be threatened with a shutdown by the very lobbying organizations it's supposed to control? I mean, that's how powerful the NAB is and how weak the FCC is.
So it's really, the FCC isn't the real villain, it's the NAB?
Oh, absolutely. The FCC's, you know, the only equivalent I can think of is with the military-industrial complex, that the generals from the Pentagon go and become the heads of the corporations that are the defense contractors, and you have this revolving door back and forth so that there's no way you can get either party not to be in collusion with the others. And if you look at the history of the FCC and the NAB, you'll see the very same revolving door. I mean, they are not only accountable to each other, the FCC are the very people who came from the NAB. I mean, that, you know, they put their own people into the FCC. There is no voice on the part of the American people. Robert McChesney wrote a wonderful book called Mass Communications, Telecommunication, and Democracy. And it's a description how when radio was first created in 1928, there was a fight between the American people and the commercial broadcasters saying, look, this is a technology that belongs to the people, not to the rich. And by 1934, the commercial broadcasters had totally locked up control of the airwaves, and we've been living under that regime since.
And that's when the Federal Communications Act passed in 1934?
Oh, well, that's when they created the, you know, the precursors of what are now the NAB and the FCC. They were different things in 28, but, you know.
We're talking to Luke Hyken, attorney for Free Radio Berkeley. We spoke earlier to Richard Edmondson of San Francisco Liberation Radio. He's been advising folks to contact Congress in hopes of getting the various congressional committees to pressure the FCC. What's your view on this?
Well, it's fine to do that. I mean, democracy works wonderfully well if you have institutions that are democratic. Some people think that's what we have in this country. I tend to think that when you have a communication system that is totally owned lock, stock, and barrel by a handful of corporations, it doesn't make for such important democratic dialogue. That's why this lockhold, this stranglehold that the commercial broadcasters have over the various media is so damaging to democratic principles. I mean, people, it's fine to say you have free speech in this country and you can say whatever you want in your living room, or you can go into a park where you might, you know, get mugged or it's dangerous to be because, you know, people aren't allowed to be outside anymore without having a legitimate purpose. It's another when you're talking about people struggling over change or ownership or control and saying, what are the vehicles for doing that? I mean, you've got to go through some billionaire corporate owner in order to be able to have the privilege of speaking. That's not democracy.
Now, this this June 16th decision by Claudia Wilken, we were kind of following Free Radio Berkeley's history. Did you want to kind of bring it up to the present?
Well, we filed a motion to alter or amend the decision, pointing out what we believe is the fact that it is totally unworkable. I mean, none of the 1,000 stations around this country are going to be able to go through this licensing process and fill out the waiver applications and go through the Federal Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. when the SEC says no for administrative convenience, we're going to say no, or no because airplanes might fall out of the sky without any showing or legitimate basis for arguing that, or say no because it's easier for us to regulate, you know, one easy listening garbage station, you know, 300 miles from your home than it is for us to regulate the 50 radio stations that could be broadcasting over that same frequency, so we're not going to do it. I mean, all of those are going to be reasons that a Federal Circuit Court of Appeals are going to say, oh, well, that's reasonable. So that what she's saying, in effect, is, no, just shut up and listen to what they play. I mean, that's really what her order says. We think it's totally contrary to law. And we've explained that to her, and we've told her why it's bad law to suggest that the American people can't challenge unconstitutional regulations by engaging in the act that they want to challenge. I mean, that's historically how it's done in this country. That's what the sit-in movement was about in the South. That's what leafleting in the parks were against these ordinances that say, no, you can't leaflet unless the police tell you it's okay. I mean, there's a history of being able to do this. And instead, she looks at cases in which people were shooting bald eagles to say, no, you got to apply for a waiver of shooting bald eagles before you can do it. I mean, we believe that the law is on our side, but then historically the law is on the side of the American people, saying it's their airwaves. They have a right to have an FCC that regulates it in their interests, not the interests of the billionaire corporations that own them. And yet that hasn't happened either, so...
The law is on the side of the people, I would say, as long as the people...
assert their right to insist upon it.
Exactly.
You got it.
Now, you know, it's strange that Claudia Wilken came down with this decision. You didn't expect this decision, did you?
No, not really.
She had previously given you some real hope, I guess, last year she came out with a very positive decision, right?
Well, each of her previous decisions suggested to us an acknowledgement and recognition of the abuses of the FCC. And then this latest one is basically saying, wait, I don't need this trouble anymore. Let me out of here. Hmm. And, in the Judy Berry case, she dismissed the heads of the government agencies that were responsible for the bombing and the cover-up and, left it like Lieutenant Kelly's responsible for Milei. I mean, I don't know what's going on. It's a shame. It's a shame to watch.
So, but you do have to...
The intention was not that, she was less courageous than other jurists. I mean... The difference is that for many years she was courageous, and that's nice to see in a federal judge, that level of independence and integrity, and it's too bad that she issued this decision. We hope she will turn it around, or we hope that we can get some other judges to turn it around.
But are you going back to her, or are you going above her?
No, we first have to go back to her, and then we will certainly go above her, but once again, they have to go into this, decade-long series of legal arguments over procedures rather than substance is disheartening, We'd love to be in court arguing over whether the FCC is allocating the airwaves in any manner even close to the public interest. I mean, the last two chairmen of the FCC have issued statements saying that the public interest standard is a total sham and a farce and meaningless. Now, you have that kind of statement coming out from the head of the agencies that are supposed to be carrying out these allocations in the public interest, and a federal judge saying, oh, no, I'm not going to look at the substance of it because you haven't gone through this impossible hoop to go through.
Now, you say the last two FCC chair have...
Ed Hunt and Kennard, yes.
And what more or less did they say again?
They said that the public interest standard, which is the standard that the statute imposes upon them, is a non-existent standard. But they have no way of allocating the airwaves, quote, in the public interest. They don't know what that means. They have not established guidelines. They have not created the criteria that anyone could meet. Reed Hunt called it, quote, a farce and a sham, end quote. Mm-hmm. They know that all they do is whore for the NAB. They know that. Anybody that looks at it knows that. It's Lori Wallach at Public Citizen calls it the Dracula Principle. It dies if it sees the light of day. I mean, if any court looks at how they're allocating the airwaves, it's going to die, But we can't get a court to look at it, because every time you go into court, the FCC says, oh, no, 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 you're not in the posture to be able to argue this. You've got to first go through A, B, C, D, E. And one court after another says, oh, that's right, you know. You can't talk about the emperor's clothes unless you go to the store and buy 500,000 yards of fabric and make sure that, you know. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's just this impossible obstacle course. But it's going to be overcome. I mean, at some point, you know.
Well, of course, isn't
it? As I say, there's 8 cases pending now, and there's more and more being brought, and the FCC's under incredible pressure to at least open up some of this space to the American public. It's their airways.
Now, isn't, in fact, the real pressure coming from the many, many micro-broadcasters who are essentially directly saying, no, we have the right to speak, and we are going to speak?
I think that's why they're changing, yes. But I also think that the total monopolization of the airwaves has become such a such an obvious reality to the American public when you see charades like the Gulf War media reports, or you see the kind of, you know, non-news that you see now, you know, these sound bites and these cute little, oh, how are you, George and Mary, between the broadcasters, well, you can't even find out what's happening in the world. The preoccupation with these nonsense stories about, you know, every time somebody hurts up someone, anybody, anywhere in the country, you read about it as if it's in your backyard to you know, create this aspect of fear, whereas you can't read anything about what's going on with the MAI or NAFTA or GATT or these Africa corporate controlled treaties. And you know, the American public puts up with a certain amount of nonsense, but you know, the inability of anybody to speak over the airwaves unless the NAB sanctions it is just something that I believe is, you know, dated. I think it's not going to stand up for another 10 years.
You know, what has been the effect of this decision on micro-broadcasters across the country? I know San Francisco Liberation and Free Radio Berkeley, San Francisco Liberation Radio and Free Radio Berkeley have closed down temporarily, or possibly permanently, I presume. I think right now they're still talking.
Well, I know Stephen is not broadcasting. He's going about, you know, his business of trying to raise this politically and publicly. I also know that there is somebody that's broadcasting over 104.1 at various times, but they're surely not doing it with Steve's agreement or approval. But
I know that there are many stations that are continuing to broadcast.
Of course, there's going to be people who are just going to say to the FCC and to the courts, I don't give a damn what you say. You know, I have a right to speak to the people in my community. Who are you to tell me no, you know?
There is, in essence, a higher law.
Well, you know, the history of the American public has been one of people saying to government institutions and organizations, this is nonsense. Who are you to tell me when to speak and where? Who are you to tell me what counter to sit at? Who are you to tell me who to marry and who to have as my close friends? I mean, the American public at some point gets fed up with fascism, you know? And that's the hope, that at some point somebody will say to the NAB and to the FCC, I'm sorry, you don't own it all.
What has been the impact of this Wilkin decision in terms of, as far as you know, the practice of micro-broadcasting across...
Well, the FCC has used it as an invitation to go about the country trying to shut everybody down. They've been successful with some people. They have not with others.
Has there been, in fact, increased FCC shutdowns since June 16th?
Well, the FCC started their expanded attack on micro-radio about 6 months ago when the NAB gave them marching orders and said, hey, this is terrible. It's no longer just a few stations. It's thousands of stations. And everyone in the communities are outraged at, you know, the fact that nobody has a right to speak and you've got to silence this movement. And they basically said to the FCC, do something about it. And the FCC started at that point going around trying to shut people down. A lot of people then were saying to them, no, you know, this Wilkin decision suggests that what we're doing is legal. Now, the fact that Judge Wilkin has now said, no, until you apply for a license is not legal, surely doesn't hurt any of the people who've already applied for licenses and been denied. It doesn't hurt people in any of the circuits in which, as she points out, you do have standing to raise these things. I mean, she points out that only in the Ninth Circuit, and that's according to her interpretation. We think she's wrong. Mm-hmm. We think they have a right to raise these things, and we're going to.
Since June 16th, though, do you know if there's been an upsurge in repression by the FCC?
I wouldn't say it's an upsurge. I would say that their attempts to arrest and silence people have been continued. continuing with the same force that they started about 6 months ago.
Do you have any specific stats or know of any particular cases?
I don't have stats because the nature of the movement is such that people are not going to, announce that they're engaged in what the FCC says is illegal activity. Stations all over the country talk to their communities and hope that the FCC will leave them alone and understand that they're providing a real service.
Right, but there are, stations do communicate with each other when they are harassed by the FCC.
And there's clearly significant harassment going on. The FCC sees this as a vindication of what they're doing, even though the decision specifically says we make no comment about the legality of the FCC's conduct.
Right, what I'm asking is, in California, do you know since mid-June, have any stations been shut down?
I know that there are a series of stations that have voluntarily shut down, and I know that there are a series of stations that have not shut down. And I know that there are a series of stations that have shut down initially and then reopened. And I know that there are a series of stations who are now starting to do this clandestinely because they don't want to have to sit in court and argue back and forth over something as stupid as to whether General Electric owns the airwaves or the American public do. They don't want to go into court and fight over the procedures involved in that. They want to do it.
You want to put your energy out there in doing what you do.
Well, you got to decide what makes sense. If it's not important for the American people to talk to each other, then they won't. If it is important, they're going to do it. Whether Rupert Murdoch or Ted Turner or, whoever says yes or no, at some point people say no. It's more important for us to have a right to engage in the dialogues that make for good decisions.
Well, I know you...
get information to do that over your nonsense soundbite garbage that you sent us.
I know you've been working on this vigorously, Eagle, for half a decade at least. And I know that you, when we spoke yesterday, you gave me a website, which I'm going to put out over the air. You are going out over Free Radio Santa Cruz. I hope that doesn't displease you.
Well, I'm giving the interview. I give interviews to people all over.
Okay, yeah, you're not in the studio, so we won't hold you criminally liable for that. Simply me interviewing you.
I don't think it's against the law for me to talk to people about this case. If I find out differently, I'll let you know.
But we want to give that website again for people to look up on the internet if they want to follow your case, Free Radio Berkeley, more carefully. You want to give that for us?
Sure. That's www.368hayes, H-A-Y-E-S, with no space, 368hayes.com, C-O-M.
And that contains all the legal documents that you've been working on and presenting?
That contains all the legal documents in the Dunifer case from the very beginning through now.
And so...
It wanted to... see our analysis of why we think what the FCC is doing is illegal, should certainly feel free to adapt anything that they think would succeed.
How can people support you?
Well, they can surely send money in support of the Free Radio Berkeley legal defense, and they can, pressure the FCC to open up the airwaves to somebody other than corporate billionaires, and they can...
That's a number for, an address for Free Radio Berkeley Defense Fund.
Oh, they can send it to us at 368 Hayes, San Francisco 94102.
368 Hayes, San Francisco, zip again?
94102.
94102. And to send stuff to the FCC, what's any...
Well, the FCC is in Washington, D.C., so they can just send it to the FCC, Washington, D.C. It'll get there.
Terrorists and letter bombers need not apply, I suppose. Or, we'll leave that one aside.
A lot of kid that way over the airwaves.
Yeah, of course.
Even kid.
So I think it's a great job you've been doing, Luke. Is there a timeline where you're likely to get a response from your latest appeal of the Claudia Wilcox?
Well, we have a hearing set for August 7th at 10 o'clock in her courtroom.
And where is that for those who want to come?
Oakland on Clay Street at the Federal Courthouse.
So that's August 7th at what time?
At 10 o'clock.
10 a.m. at the Oakland Federal Courthouse on Clay Street?
Yeah, anyone who comes should be prepared to stay in line for at least an hour because the marshals decided that nobody that's even got gold fillings can get through their metal detectors. There were 100 people that were not allowed into the courtroom because they were only letting about one through every 5 minutes at the last hearing.
I'm sure a necessary security precaution.
Oh, really necessary, FCC in their, fancy suits went through that metal detector in 4 seconds and were just waved right through, but all of the people that were, supporting micro radio couldn't get into the courthouse.
Well, perhaps Santa Cruz Radio can bring up a transmitter in front of the courthouse and do a little transmitting during the proceedings.
I recommend anybody that's going to try to go through the metal detector not have any clothes on at all, otherwise they'll never get through.
We'll call the explicit players in Berkeley, perhaps they can.
Good luck.
Thank you, Luke. I appreciate the time.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Good to talk.
And that was Luke Hyken, attorney at law in San Francisco for Free Radio Berkeley. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, still on the line and still on the air and hopefully still on target. As fate would have it, just as this interview is ending, we received a phone call from that grand old man of Free Radio himself, Stephen Dunifer of Free Radio Berkeley. Hi, Stephen.
Hello there.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm just doing fine.
Excellent. We have a kind of a primitive setup here, so I hope your message is going through. Speak up as loudly as you can.
I'll do what I can. And
excellent. So we spoke earlier, and you've been kind of stumping the country trying to bring this issue of government censorship and the importance of freeing the airwaves to the American, well, to the world public.
That's correct. I head off next week to a grassroots radio conference in Boulder, Colorado. I was just in Portland for the Alliance for Community Media, and prior to that I was in Austin, Texas for the Grassroots News Network conference. And in the end of August, I'm headed to Italy for the World Association of Community Radio conference. So I'm trying to bring this issue out to as many people as possible.
What kind of response are you meeting with?
The response is overwhelmingly supportive.
Wow. And have you been talking at all to other free radio broadcasters who have been continuing to broadcast in their own jurisdictions?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand. I can barely hear you.
Right. My problem is I have to talk away from the telephone because it's a difficult line. Can you hear me now?
Right.
I was asking if you've been talking to other free radio folks.
Of course.
And how are they taking the Wilkin decision that shut down free
radio? I mean, some people decide to go off the air, and I really think that's a shame. Because, I mean, you know, no one ever really had legal protection, you know, per se, while this court case was winding its way through, and it's still winding its way through, as you know, discern from Luke's interview. I mean, it's not over by any stretch. And you know, anybody thinking that they had some sort of quasi-legal protection while this court case was going through was, you know, really, you know, not entertaining the proper perception.
Do you?
And nothing has really changed other than the fact that, you know, we got this injunction against me and no one else, for that matter. And, you know, quite frankly, that this is an issue that needs to be taken to the wall in all ways and shapes and forms.
Mm-hmm.
And one way that this can be done, other than actually, you know, setting up a micropower station and empowering your community, you know, is to, you know, help us in a national campaign to essentially out the corporate broadcasters as the, you know, mendacious, avaricious, greedy enemies of free speech as they are.
Well, Luke Hyken.
And,
go ahead.
You know, I would like to invite everyone there in Santa Cruz to come down to Monterey the weekend after this on Saturday the 25th, where the California Broadcasters Association will be holding its annual convention. The California Broadcasters Association, like the National Association of Broadcasters, is on a search and destroy mission against any micropower station that comes in on their radar screen, and they have been directly trying to intervene in local zoning permit process against Free Radio Berkeley to get a use permit for our operation here. And I think that like what we did in Las Vegas in April, where we actually had a demonstration right on the doorsteps of the NAB convention at the big convention hall there, we intend on targeting these broadcasters wherever they go, as long as they are on this campaign against micropower broadcasting and a campaign to gag the free speech rights of average folk in this country. So that'll be happening around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Can't think of the street off the top of my head, but there's a park right there at City Hall in downtown Monterey, about 3 or 4 blocks from the DoubleTree Hotel, which is the location of the convention itself. And that's at the corner of Del Monte and Pacific, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want to do is get a whole bunch of folks down there to gather and march over to the hotel and let the California Broadcasters Association know what we think of them, and then proceed up Cannery Row, leafleting and trying to engage the average public there. I mean, there'd be tourists there from all over the country and all over the world who I think would be very interested in knowing about these free speech issues that are happening in this country, and actually on a global basis, really.
Mm-hmm. Again, this is July 25th, and the meeting itself of the California Association of Broadcasters.
Yeah, California Broadcasters Association.
And that's going to beginning at 1 o'clock?
Right. We would gather about 1 o'clock at this park at City Hall there in downtown Monterey.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of the name off the top of my head, but we'll be issuing press statements and some flyers tomorrow and all that for people to, reference. And if you'll be good if people, for example, in Santa Cruz could set up a carpooling point where we could meet, maybe, I don't know how long it takes you to get to Monterey, probably an hour or less, so,
mm-hmm.
Maybe meet around 11 o'clock in Santa Cruz and carpool from there, and we'll be trying to set up a carpool point up here in Berkeley, and hopefully people, around will be, coming down for it.
Or in San Francisco or in San Jose, different carpools in different cities.
Right.
I think it's a great idea. It focuses, I think, attention where the real power is, which isn't really the FCC, but in the corporate masters of the FCC, the people who own and control the airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if you want information about this locally here in Santa Cruz, you can give a call to the Free Radio Santa Cruz voicemail at 427-4523 in a couple of days, after which point I think they may have something on it. Until then, you can give a call to the organization I work for, which is HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and that phone number is easy enough, 423-HUF, 423-4833, for information on the carpooling and demonstration plans for a counterattack on